This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a speech earlier today to the National Endowment for Democracy, President Bush restated the broad goals of his policy in Iraq, stay the course, and establish a working democracy as a model of freedom in the Middle East.
The failure of Iraqi democracy would embolden terrorists around the world. It increased dangers to the American people and extinguished the hopes of millions in the region. Iraqi democracy will succeed, and that success will send forth the news from Damascus to Tehran that freedom can be the future of every nation. The establishment of a free Iraq at the heart of the Middle East will be a watershed event in the global democratic revolution.
The president does not say how long that will take or what the eventual price will be in either blood or treasure. Shortly after he spoke, the Secretary of Defense announced plans to rotate some forces into Iraq and others out. The total number of troops is expected to decline somewhat, but given the reluctance of many allies, this can only be described at this point as an open-ended American commitment. Even many who oppose the war in Iraq now say the United States needs to stay and finish what it started. But as the price of occupation goes up, alternative exit strategies are getting more attention. Today we'll hear several proposals from different political perspectives that may differ on timetables and tactics, but all of them call for the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq as soon as New Year's in one case, or by the end of 2004 in another. Later in the program, we'll talk about the proliferation of public opinion polls in Iraq and how much we can rely on what they say. But first, how and when should the U.S. end the occupation of Iraq? Does the U.S. have a moral responsibility to stay and rebuild? Is it important to ensure that the next government in Baghdad is fair and democratic? What problems might a rapid withdrawal cause, and how do you weigh those against the problems of staying? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now on the phone from Capitol Hill is Dennis Kucinich, Democratic congressman from Ohio. As most of you probably know, Congressman Kucinich is running for president. We've invited all of the Democratic candidates on this program. As it happens, Congressman Kucinich is scheduled to be with us next Wednesday, but he's also among the prominent voices calling for a rapid withdrawal from Iraq, so we've asked him on today to talk about that. And, Congressman, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Good to be on Talk of the Nation.
How quickly do you think American troops should leave with Iraq?
Well, we have to start off with an acknowledgement, and that is that continued U.S. presence in Iraq is counterproductive. We can't achieve our goals of securing and reconstructing the country at the same time as more Americans are getting killed every day, and every day we're inside Iraq, the situation gets progressively worse. So I think we obviously need a major change, and that's why I believe we need to get the U.S. out and the U.N. in, and my plan, which is on my website at Kucinich.us, is to bring the troops home by the end of the year.
By the end of this year?
Right.
And how to turn it over to whom?
Well, we have to acknowledge that, that the U.N. will not go in unless the main source of resistance and instability, the United States, agrees to pull out. And the U.S. must renounce all political and economic interests in Iraq. And the president proved this by achieving only a symbolic vote at the U.N. with no commitment from other nations. My plan would phase in a U.N. force and phase out the U.S. while keeping a Navy fleet to defend the territorial integrity of Iraq from foreign invasion. And I think that the U.S. would pay for the rebuilding of all that we damaged in the nation. The U.N. would handle the oil with no privatization of those assets. The U.N. would handle the contracts with no sweetheart deals for administration favorites. And the U.N. would handle the development of a cause of governance so that the Iraqi people could eventually handle their own affairs. All these principles can be incorporated in a resolution, which I believe would create a new course. And by charting a new course, gain confidence of the world community through the United Nations.
As you mentioned, the United Nations has been reluctant to get involved. American allies have been reluctant to send troops. I believe a Polish soldier who is there was killed today. Are you confident that the United Nations is going to be prepared to step in as the United States withdraws?
Well, my belief is that the UN would only do so if the U.S. would renounce all political and economic interest, and that would enable us to rotate U.N. troops in and U.S. troops out. We'd have to have an agreement that would form the basis of a new direction. The current direction we're in, we are stuck. The current direction that we're in, the war is counterproductive. We can't achieve any goals of securing or reconstructing Iraq. American troops are going to continue to die. The security situation is getting progressively worse. That's why we need a new direction, a new resolution. We have to go to the UN, get the world community involved, and get our troops out of there.
It's only been a few months since President Bush declared the end of major combat. Obviously, more American troops have now been killed since then than before then. But a lot of people would say, isn't it a little early to declare this a quagmire and say that the U.S. can't accomplish its goals?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, everyone who's been an objective analyst realizes that there was no plan for an occupation. It was a plan for an invasion, and that the situation continues to deteriorate, that the men and women who serve there are simply targets, and that we need to reach out to the world community. This is where we got into trouble in the first place. By essentially going it alone or dragging some other nations in with us, we created a circumstance where we incurred the wrath of the world community by invading a nation that did not attack us. We have no basis for being in Iraq. I mean, if it was wrong to go in, it's wrong to stay in. And so I think that a plan which aims at reconnecting with the world community will have many benefits. The benefits include an acceptance of the world community on matters of international security, a disavowing of preemption and unilateralism, and a reconnecting with old allies who I think would be glad to participate as long as the U.S. would forego claims on oil contracts and control of the political destiny in Iraq.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to Sandy, who's with us on the line from St. Louis.
Hi, thank you for having me. I wanted just to say that I am supporting President Bush because I believe there are certain things that are worth fighting for and that there are some things that we can't forget, such as the 3,000 people that died on 9/11. And I think that this Middle East situation is one in which it's the hotbed of terror in the world, and we must address this problem. And so the blood and treasure is worth the price. And I find it difficult to listen to the divisiveness. I recognize it, that it's probably because of the election coming up. But I think it's rather unprecedented that the people who are not supporting the president are not looking at the broader objectives here in terms of safety and security for our country and the humanitarian needs of the people in the Middle East.
Congressman Kucinich?
Yes, I thank the caller because she points out why it's so important for us to take a new direction. See, there are many Americans who believe that Iraq had something to do with 9/11. She mentioned the 3,000 people who died on 9/11. Many Americans believe Iraq was responsible for that. This administration actually had a PR campaign that caused many Americans to think Iraq had something to do with 9/11. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, nothing to do with al-Qaeda's role in 9/11, nothing to do with the anthrax attack on this country. Iraq had no ability to attack America, no intention to do so. Iraq did not have any and was not trying to obtain uranium from Niger. And we read in today's news accounts that Iraq actually tried to find a way to avoid the war through back channels on the eve of the attack. So we need to get back to truth here. And the truth is that we shouldn't have gone in the first place, that the only way that we can be secure as a nation is through international cooperation. We cannot go it alone. These policies of preemption and unilateralism are antithetical to America's long-term interests. Does anyone listening actually believe that America became safer once we attacked Iraq? We actually inspired the cause of terrorism with our attack on Iraq. We made it much more difficult to be able to bring the situation to a successful conclusion. We created more of a problem for terrorism in the world with the invasion of Iraq. And as far as blood and treasure, I think we have to be very careful in calling for the blood of Americans to be shed, especially in a cause that is so easily demonstrated to have been both false and corrupt.
Congressman Kucinich, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dennis Kucinich of Ohio speaking with us from Capitol Hill. As we mentioned earlier, he's scheduled to appear with us for a longer appearance next Wednesday to discuss his presidential bid, and you'll get a chance to ask him more questions then. But we thank him for his time today. Now, another perspective on how to exit Iraq. Joining us here in Studio 3A is William Galston. He's director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Policy at the University of Maryland School of Public Affairs, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be back, Neil.
You've got a three-point plan, as I understand it, for exiting Iraq. Tell us a little bit about it, if you would, briefly.
Well, I find myself located between President Bush and Representative Kucinich. As I indicated the last time I was on this show, I was not in favor of going into Iraq in the first place. However, now that we're there, we have incurred very, very important responsibilities, which in my judgment, we must discharge. And I don't think that it is responsible to set a timetable for withdrawal. I don't think that a timetable can be met, but we can talk about creating the conditions that will maximize the chances that the Iraqis will be able to take over their own affairs as quickly as possible. And here are the three things I think we ought to do. Okay, number one, I agree with strong supporters of the war like Senator Lieberman, who have argued consistently from the get-go that we ought to have internationalized the occupation immediately after the end of the war. I think we blew our chance to do it then, but I don't think that chance is gone forever. I think we ought to go back to the international community and negotiate more seriously. That's the first point.
Give them more power, in other words.
We're going to have to give something to get something. Yep. I mean, that's what a bargain is.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I also agree with Senator Biden, who says that the administration is behaving as though Iraq is some sort of prize that we've won and now want to clutch to ourselves, and just the reverse is the case. Secondly, to use a barbarous word, Iraqification. Right? The Iraqis have to move towards control of their own security affairs as quickly as possible.
So an Iraqi police force and Iraqi army.
I believe that although I have listened carefully to the arguments in favor of disbanding and demobilizing the Iraqi army, that all things considered, it was a mistake, and we ought to do what we can to reverse the portion of that mistake that's still reversible. I agree the senior officer corps shouldn't have anything to do with the new Iraqi security force or army, but there are hundreds of thousands of people who were not supporters of the regime in the army. Saddam Hussein didn't trust him, which is why he created all the alternative security forces, and I think we could have used more of them than we did. Point number three is acceleration. It's clear that none of this is going to work until the Iraqis take back control of their political destiny. We are behaving as though time is our friend, as though time is on our side, that we can take 18 months or 2 or 3 years to create a constitutional drafting process and a constitution. I'm with Tom Friedman, who wrote this morning in the New York Times that we really have to crack some heads in the Iraqi Governing Council. We have to indicate that time is of the essence. We cannot allow the best to become the enemy of the good in the constitution writing process. We need something that's good enough to get on with the job. We need a sense of urgency.
And again, you didn't set a timetable. You want to get the tasks done rather than set an artificial date.
As I said, I would not have gone in the first place, but I believe that it is irresponsible to set an artificial deadline. It has to be driven by what we need to do to discharge our responsibilities.
And briefly, just before we go to a break, would those tasks include making sure that Saddam Hussein could not come back?
I think it would be a cataclysmic reverse for American foreign policy if anything like that were allowed to happen. We can't allow that to happen.
William Galston of the University of Maryland School of Public Affairs will continue speaking with him, and take more of your phone calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're discussing alternative exit strategies for Iraq. I'm Neil Conan. It is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with various people this hour about alternative ideas for the allowance of U.S. troops to leave Iraq rapidly. You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. Here with us now is William Galston, director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Policy at the University of Maryland School of Public Affairs. And let's get callers back involved. Our next caller is Richard, who's with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, I never agreed with the initial makeup of this war in the beginning. But now that we have an inexperienced president that got us in this mess, we need to provide the proper amount of troops to finish the job.
American troops, you mean?
American troops. You know, he's committed us. We need to get this job done. Instead of having this nitpicking, they're picking us off one by one. He needs to put a sufficient number of troops in there to do the job right.
And
that was initially the prediction that first commander of the
General Shinseki, you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. How many troops would it need, do you think? And when you say doing it right, what does doing it right mean?
Well, you need to stop this chaos in order to you need to stop the chaos in order to begin the process of building the country without interference. And in order to do that, you're going to have an excess of 200,000 troops on the ground, and whatever support material that's required by those troops also.
Okay, Richard, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Galston, get a response?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that when you add together the U.S. troops and the Iraqi security forces, that the total is not large enough to do the job. I saw a calculation recently to the effect that at any given moment, only 28,000 U.S. troops are actually out on patrol, and that's manifestly inadequate. The troop levels may have to go up before they can come down, and I very much wish that the administration had leveled with the American people before the war about the level of troop commitment and funding that it was going to require after the war.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ann, and Ann joins us from Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Hello. I just want to make a statement that I am a liberal. I protested against this war for many reasons. However, we as a U.S. decided to go in. We bombed, killed many people. We seem to neglect that in the news, but we did, in fact, kill many innocent Iraqi people. We disrupted their lives, thousands of them. And at this point, I feel very strongly that we have an obligation to rebuild Iraq, and I feel we better stay there, and we better do it right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Ann. Mr. Galston, thanks you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
William Galston is director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Policy at the University of Maryland School of Public Affairs. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Joining us now from his office on Capitol Hill is Republican Congressman Jim Leach of Iowa. And Congressman, thank you for being with us.
I'm glad to be with you, Neil.
During a conference call earlier this week with reporters in your home state in Iowa, you called the Bush administration's plan to stay the course in Iraq one of the most misguided assumptions in the history of United States strategic thinking. Instead, you said there should be a decisive withdrawal of military forces. So what do you mean by decisive withdrawal?
Well, I'm outside the realm of conventional wisdom. And conventional wisdom is that nation building takes many, many years, and you should go along in a slow, gradual kind of path. And that you've got to be committed to that, and that you must ignore the bumps in the road, the bumps being the anarchy that's underway. My sense is that that all has a degree of logic to it. If you're dealing in a rational circumstance where the new weapon of choice in the world, which is kind of a terrorist, murderous approach, doesn't apply. But at the moment, in Iraq, at least in the Sunni triangle, and it appears that American troops, rather than being a stabilizing force, are magnets of instability. That is, they cause people to strike out, and they endanger people around American forces. And so one can say the mistake is that we don't have twice as many, but in parts of that circumstance, twice as many are not likely to be creating more order, but are likely to be creating more disorder. And so my sense is that we ought to set first on the civilian side, an international face, putting an international head of civilian reconstruction, keeping the very competent American group that's there to assist them. But competence matters not if there's not support. And so what you need is to take away levels of antagonism and to take the American part out of the Sunni triangle, I think improves rather than weakens the situation. And then I would keep some forces in the north and perhaps some in the south, but to have a very rapid withdrawal of the American side in some of the worst circumstances, and as rapidly as possible, Iraqize the situation. We worked very hard to delay at the UN a call for a new constitutional process, and we acceded to the latest possible thing we could. Instead, we ought to be putting pressure on the new Iraqi governing council to immediately do a constitution. It doesn't take 3 years, and to move towards democratic elections on a radically rapid time, people, to invest Iraqis in their government. Instead, we seem to think that what we want is a long-haul circumstance with U.S. bases there, and it is quite likely that bases become magnets for not only anarchy but continued instability in Iraq and rationalizations for other peoples that are Muslim as well as potentially Iraqis around the world to strike out at American assets someplace else. And in our country, we know, is not an invulnerable bastion against this kind of action. And I think we have to think through what causes stability and then what causes anarchy. And to back off of the things that increase anarchy and to advance the things that increase stability.
Let's get some more callers on the line. Angela's with us from Corvallis, Oregon.
Hello, and first I'd like to say that's one of the most beautiful political statements I've heard about this situation. To me, it makes complete and rational sense what you just said. However, my question is, in all this talk of withdrawal, I, as an American citizen, want to hear some sort of presidential accountability. It's nice to say, oh, well, we can get the troops out, we can do this, but me as a citizen, I've, you know, sacrificed my fellows as well as my, you know, my hard-earned dollars. And I would like not only a withdrawal from Iraq, but an entrance back into an America. And how come I haven't really heard anything about this from, you know, the analysts or, you know.
Well, when you mean accountability for the president, something beyond the fact that he'll face re-election next year.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, if you as the head of a CEO, it's a bad plan. And all the board holders are going to say, hey, that was a bad plan. I'm not asking him to go down on his knees, but I'm just, you know, I need something more, you know.
Congressman Leach, what do you think?
Well, there are reasons that people have a case for disagreeing with the president and, frankly, reasons to agree. But I think whichever side you're on, you have to recognize that we're in unprecedented times and that as a country, we're feeling our way through dilemmas. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things we have to do as a people, certain things we have to differ with the judgment of leaders or agree with the judgment of leaders. But one of the bases we have to begin with is that this is a constitutionally sanctioned action. The president got the United States Congress in a strong vote of majority. I happen to have dissented from it, but I recognize that constitutionally he had the authority and the judgment of the Congress behind him. Now, whether it was the right thing to do, there are aspects that have been vindicated and there are aspects that are absolutely explosive, and not the least of which is that unlike World War II settings where you had Germany and Japan looking at reconstruction on their own, here we have the rest of the Muslim world looking with great dissent at what we're doing, mm-hmm. and we have an internationalized opposition in a way that we have never confronted as a country before. Now, the president today, and quite wisely, talked about the word democracy and the importance of the element. On the other hand, there is a great power of nationalism. And one of the great questions is, even though we might have a better system than someone else, how do we respect intricacies and differences of judgments and the rights of others to make their own mistakes, especially if the national security of the United States may not be directly involved? And so we have to think that through, too.